Let's talk about our kids. Our kids here in Indiana is the Department of Child Services. The director, who has been director now for little more than a year. Is that about right, Judge?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Actually, it will be 2 years. March. Boy, March 25th.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Very fast.
Judge Bonaventura, welcome.
Thank you.
So what's going on in the Department of Child? First of all, there's all every day, every week, the television station is looking for something to do, has some story about your department. In this budget season, I know you turned your budget in, the House has approved a budget, they've sent it over to the Senate. Did the House give you the resources you need to do the job for our kids?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. I think they did. The resources that we asked for will do the job that we need to do to keep kids safe in Indiana.
Is the problem getting enough staff, getting enough caseworkers, making sure they're trained, getting them out of their offices, out to really find what's going on to make sure that our kids, the kids that are placed in the care of the state are well taken care of?
Yeah, I think that there's so many steps to getting this right. First and foremost, maybe not foremost, but definitely first, is finding the right person for the job. So the recruitment piece is really crucial to finding people that are cut out for this work. You and I spoke a few moments ago about how difficult the work is. And so finding people that are not squeamish at things like abuse and neglect. And so once we find the right person, the training is 8 weeks in a classroom, 4 weeks in the field. And so we've got 12 weeks of training, and then being able to identify and intervene and critically think about what abuse and neglect is and what we do to intervene and prevent and strengthen families to be able to take care of their kids in a safe way. So sometimes it is about having enough staff or having more staff. And sometimes just as much it's about how do we handle the caseload that we have and how do we manage the work that we have to do day in and day out.
From where you have sat, not just as a juvenile court judge in Lake County, but now that you've sat almost 2 years in this position, is parenting getting worse?
Well, I think that parenting is probably more difficult from the standpoint of the fact that we all know, especially people my age, that back in the day, divorce was almost never heard of. Right. Families were really intact. So you grew up with your mom and your dad. We have a lot of blended families. And so there's a lot of people that are living with children that are not their own. And all of the stress that comes with that, with another father or another mother involved. And so there's a lot of turmoil in that regard. Of course, we have, you know, addiction, the substance that's hit our people nationwide in a way that it wasn't prevalent when we were younger. So I think those are a lot of concerns. Of course, the job market for some people of a certain educational level is not plentiful with jobs. Mm-hmm. So all of those things are stressors in a family's life. So do I think it's worse? Probably in some ways. Yes.
239-1310. 239-1310. We're talking with Judge Mary Beth Bonaventura of the head of DCS. Now, we've got to remind you, we'll take calls, but A, she's a judge. B, she's the head of an organization that is dealing with, that intervenes on behalf of kids. So, she cannot answer directly any case that her office is working on or maybe within the court system or on appeal, because I heard the new Chief Justice, I don't want to cross her. I haven't met her yet.
She's great.
I don't want to get on her bad side. You know, I don't want any judge or any lawyer getting in trouble, and then they come looking at me and then they'll put me in a dungeon somewhere.
A dungeon.
I've heard the Chief Justice has special dungeons. Anyway, 239-1310, 239-1310. One of the things that I think people in the community don't understand or misunderstand is if all of a sudden they get a knock on the door or a phone call or a letter from DCS, what are parents' rights? In other words, if a parent is accused of something, is the presumption that because parents perceive, because they, or the ones that call here on this program, perceive that they're guilty until proven innocent, that the caseworkers just assume the worst of the adult. What is the actual process? What's the actual standard?
So if there's a knock at the door, Of course, you want to answer that, and you want to make your children and answer the questions and make your children available to be examined based
and you
on.
Ask for an ID.
Absolutely.
The adult can say, wait a minute, show me your badge. Is there a badge?
Yes.
It's like an ID thing?
They have an identification that will tell the person who they are and where they work and things like that. So I would absolutely say make sure that they are who they say they are and check that out. Because people have tried to do that in the past, so we don't want that to happen to anybody. And then, you know, you have to answer the questions. You do have rights. You can be represented by an attorney. You can say, hey, I want to see an attorney before I talk to you. But I want people to remember this is not a criminal case.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's no Miranda warnings given, and things like that. Now, that said, that doesn't mean it can't turn into a criminal case if there's, the abuse is such that, you know, there would be a law that would be broken by way of a battery or whatever the crime might be. But the standard, so in a criminal case, it is beyond a reasonable doubt that the prosecutor has to prove their case. In a case of abuse or neglect, the standard of proof legally is preponderance of the evidence, mm-hmm. which means that more likely than not, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the standard is lower than it is for a criminal case because we're talking about the safety and welfare of children, oftentimes who cannot speak for themselves.
Right.
And so the standard is a little bit lower. But once it gets to the court, you do have the right to bring an attorney to court. Now, you don't have the right to be represented in the way a criminal case, you know, that you have an absolute right. So in some jurisdictions, and there's, you know, a move on so that all families, all parents in cases will be appointed lawyers. We're not quite there yet. But you do have the right, and any court would, if you said, hey, I want a continuance, I want to hire a lawyer, they would do that. And in cases where parents are maybe intellectually lower functioning, most of the time, the court will appoint a lawyer to represent those parents.
In these proceedings, these are still considered juvenile proceedings.
They're held in the juvenile court, yes.
So if somebody is accused by DCS of wrongdoing, alleged wrongdoing, and they walk into the court thinking it's going to be like Judge Judy or Law and Order, this is a totally different system.
Totally different in that we don't have an audience. There aren't people sitting around the way you might in an adult criminal case or a civil case of some kind. So it's a proceeding that's held confidentially, you come into a courtroom and the judge will read a petition to you and ask you to admit or deny the allegations that are in the petition.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's set over for, you know, a disposition. So a disposition is what the case manager will compile all the information and say to the judge, this is what we think will help this family
right.
to be rehabilitated, to get their children back or to not have children removed from their home.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I had some conversations with some people over at the Marion County Juvenile Court about something they're planning to do this spring. And in the course of that conversation, we talked about the fact that the public is used to seeing what trials or hearings are like in the adult sense, because in the states that allow cameras in the courtroom, you see that. There used to be court TV. There's 8 million TV court shows. But there's nobody's ever done a show about juvenile. Nobody's ever done one of these reality shows about juvenile because of the protection of juveniles. Nobody's even done a recreation. Are we at a point where in a society where people are aware or think they're aware of how the adult justice system works, that we need to do something to maybe explain to people the differences in the juvenile system? So if people go in there and expect, well, I object, and say, wait a minute, that's not how we work here.
Well, maybe you don't know this, but several years ago, the Indiana Supreme Court granted access to the juvenile court in Indiana, namely my court up in Lake County, and we did, in fact, do two television shows. One was an 8-part docuseries aired on MTV,
okay.
and the other one was a 6-part docuseries aired on MSNBC, and that one is called Lockup. It's called Lake County Juvenile Justice Lockup.
Okay,
and so yeah, they can actually see, you know, real life depictions. They were all real cases; nothing was scripted.
Oh.
And the Supreme Court under Justice Randy Shepard had decided that it was time that the public, namely parents and children, see what the consequences are of their actions and what happens when their kids come into the court system. A lot of the cases involved abuse and neglect of the parents, which got the child in the juvenile delinquency arena. And to this day, it still airs on MSNBC about every 3 or 4 months.
They need to put it in prime time, they'll get better ratings.
Well, that's funny you would say that. We've at some point, the thought was that we would try to do that show, because I can't tell you that to this day, people say, oh, I showed that to my kids, or can you come here and talk about the show and let us see that? And in fact, universities have been using it as a teaching tool. The problem with not being able to do that in a reality way, the way that they are doing them on television, as you said, there's so many, is that, at least in the way we did it, there was a detention of the child. So in the cases that are out there now, parents are signing off saying, you know, or people are saying, yes, whatever the court decides is fine with me. But this is about kids that have committed delinquent acts, at least some of the shows that we did. And when you're talking about child abuse and neglect, you know, being able to say, I'm going to have the public look into our lives with a microscope probably isn't really good for children. And so we've tried to figure out a way to do that, maintaining confidentiality with people and still being able to do and make it a real show, in that if you do certain things, you know, teenager, this is what the consequence is, and trying to figure that piece out. There are people working on how to do that. It is important for the public to see, I believe.
You also mentioned the number one standard in not just what a juvenile court does, but what the Department of Child Services does in the best interest of the child.
Exactly. And that's overriding, which is so different than what happens in the adult court. So you just talked about in the adult court about people saying objection. They do that in the juvenile court. All the rules of evidence and all the court rules pertain. The only thing that juveniles don't get is a jury trial the way an adult does. Everything else is the same. But the underwriting or overriding or overarching theme in the juvenile cases is what's in the best interest of a child. And at the same time, simultaneously keeping the public safe as well.
Let me go to Brenda to start today at 239-1310. Hi, Brenda.
Hello, Amos. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Hello to your guests. My question is, now this is me personally, in my opinion, in to have the child that is being abused, why is it that a lot of times, even though it's been proven that they've been mistreated in the home, they wind up putting them back in the home? My feeling is a child only has one chance in life. And if you find that the person that is the caretaker is mistreating that child, I think that that person needs to have his rights relinquished and the child put in a safe environment. But a lot of times, the kids go back, and they wind up being dead or really physically abused to their mentally disabled.
That's a great question, Judge.
Okay, so in Indiana, we have a law that says that we have to work with families to reunite families, that parents do have the right to the care and custody of their children, so that if something happens and a parent abuses or neglects their child, the Department of Child Services and the court is duty bound to provide services to that family to see if they can get to a point where they are capable of taking care of their children in a safe way. So if the parents are ordered to do a variety of things, and I can just tell you as a judge, I ordered thousands of parents to do things, and most parents do get it right. And once they do follow through and they comply with the court orders, the court has to send those children back home. That's not to say that some parents don't get it right the second time, but our law does allow parents to have the right to rehabilitate themselves. And if they fail to do it,
hold on, Brenda. Let me let the judge finish, and then I'll come back to you.
And if they fail to do that, then the Department of Child Services can file a petition to terminate parental rights. But we have to prove then that the conditions that existed, the conditions, the reasons why we removed the child no longer exist. I'm sorry. The reason we removed the child hasn't been rectified. And then we can, the court can terminate their rights.
All right. Okay.
And Brenda, I heard your point. I think that's a point that you have to make known to your state representative and your state senator.
Okay. I'll do that, because I know we're having younger parents, and a lot of them don't know how to deal in situations, and it's easy for them to lose their temper and do other things. And then there's older people that do the same thing, too. But the child is the one that I'm looking at, and my heart goes out, because I'm a parent, to see a child mistreated and then have to go back in it.
I'm with you, Wendy, right, my sister. But, again, that's something you let your lawmakers know about. I appreciate that.
Let me go.
Thank you. Let me go to Karen at 239-1310. Hi, Karen. Karen? Karen? I think let me go to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hi there. I have a two-part question.
Okay.
The first part is, if you were giving permanent custody of a child and you've had that child for 9 years, do you have to go back every so often and get that permanent custody redone? And also, is there a way to terminate the rights of the parent if there has no been any contact since then in the 9 years?
All right, this is a great hypothetical. Let me make sure I understand this before I see whether the judge can or cannot answer. So if somebody gets permanent custody of a child, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Does it have to go through renewal? That's kind of what you're, all right?
Yes.
The judge is giving me this look that says?
No, if you're that's the definition of permanent means forever after, unless something else happens in the interim. But if you're given permanent custody of your child or of a child, I don't know why you would be going back every so often for, I'm guessing, a review hearing is kind of what I'm hearing you describe.
Well, the reason is because the Board of Health, when I go to, the mom is still trying to file taxes, when I go to take them the information, they tell me that this information is outdated.
So wait a minute. You have permanent custody of a child, correct?
Yes.
And you're trying to file that you're taking care of the child for income tax purposes, correct?
Yes.
And the birth mom or one of the birth parents is filing on that child?
Yes.
That's called a violation of the I, R, and the S.
And I go through it every year, and I went to the health department.
Why went the health
department? Put a hold on their... giving her a copy of their birth certificate, and they said they couldn't because she is the biological parent, and also because that was one of the reasons they said my letter was old. It's outdated.
The letter, who said
the court.
A court said that?
No, the Marion County said that my letter needed to be updated.
You have a letter from a court that says you have permanent custody of a child.
Yes.
And the Marion County Board of Health is saying you need to update it?
Yes.
I'm the honorary lawyer. The judge is a real lawyer. She can't answer the question, but I'm going to semi-answer the question. Whoever you talk to at the health department, they wrong. Now, what you need to do to protect your rights and your child's rights, you may have to consult an attorney. And this might be one of those things where the attorney spends 20 minutes writing a letter to the health department and some other people and to the IRS saying back up.
Okay.
But if you have a court order, not a letter, if you have an order from a Indiana.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Is it an Indiana court?
Yes.
Okay, well, if you got that, then that overrides anything. But you also asked a question about, can anyone get a birth certificate for anybody? Can a non-custodial parent get a birth certificate for their non-custodial child?
I don't know the answer to that. I would think you probably could get a birth certificate.
Yeah, the birth certificate thing, they may be able to do so. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's tight, as tight as you might want it. But I think you got a church home?
Yes.
Talk to your pastor. There may be an attorney that's a member of your church that has some experience in family law and child law that
now,
can help you.
Is there a way to, after 9 years, terminate rights?
Judge, well, I think that's a question I think you can't answer.
It depends on how she, if you've adopted the child, then the rights have been terminated.
I haven't.
So
I just
if you're the guardian.
For 8 years.
Right. Okay, so if there would, you know, there really wouldn't be a way the court could terminate the parental rights unless you do an adoption, because what that does is really renders the child an orphan without parents because you aren't the legal parent. You're the guardian and not the child's parent. So I don't think that termination, the only way that termination would occur is either through abuse and neglect and a petition filed by the Department of Child Services or an adoption. Simultaneous with the adoption is the termination of the parent, of the biological parent's rights.
Okay. Yeah, the other thing that a lawyer would be helpful is to read the order from the court.
Okay.
And make sure that the order of the court is together.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I went back to the judge after the same day that I left the Board of Health, and the judge said that he doesn't know why this is not sufficient.
Who's your judge?
It was a man. That's all I remember.
Over juvenile court? Or it's downtown?
It's downtown.
Okay. I would say if the judge said he don't understand what the health department is, I'm with the judge.
Okay.
Okay. That means the health department is wrong. And you might also want to follow up with the head of the health department, Dr. Virginia Kane.
Okay.
Okay.
I will do so. Thank you.
Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is After News Names with the folks from the Department of Child Services. This is your opportunity to find out how that department works. When we come back, we're going to settle this once and for all. And we're going to ask the director, can just a child call up DCS and say, my parents beat me up. I got welts. I got burns all over my body. Come rescue me. And there's nothing there. But can kids really do that with DCS, or is that another urban legend? We'll get the answer to that after the break. It's Afternoons with Amos Moore for Friday.
This is Emmy Award-winning anchor Andrea Moorhead from Channel 13. You're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310 The Light.
With Judge Mary Beth Bonaventura, the head of Indiana's Department of Child Services, I got a question at praiseindy.com. They're talking about a case in Connecticut and wondering whether Indiana's rules are the same in Connecticut. Evidently, in Connecticut, the state ordered a child to take chemotherapy, even though the parents did not want the child to take chemotherapy. And so the question is, in a medical situation where the medical people say, you know, a child ought to have this treatment, and the parents say, no, we don't want to do that, can DCS intervene in Indiana?
Yes, and probably have intervened in cases like that, maybe not with chemotherapy, because what we just spoke about shortly ago, that, you know, we do what's in the best interest of the child, mm-hmm. not of the parent. So if the doctor somehow gets to us, so we aren't out there just policing, right. you know, what's happening. Those calls come to us and say, we've got a child in the hospital. Then the doctor says the child needs chemotherapy to live, and the parents are denying that, that treatment to take place. Then they file the petition and they come before the judge, and the judge makes that decision. I can speak from personal experience. I had a case once where the child needed open heart surgery. He was 8 years old. And the mother said, no, he doesn't look sick to me. And I don't think he needs it. And the doctor said,
it wasn't a religious objection.
No, it was not a religious objection. She just said, I'm afraid if he has it, he's going to die during the surgery. He doesn't look sick to me. And he didn't look sick to me either when I saw him. But he had a congenital heart disease. The doctor said he wouldn't live past the age of 15 if he didn't have this surgery at that time. And so we got a second opinion. The second group of doctors said the same thing, and I ordered that he have the surgery. Now, understand, it's a very scary thing, mm-hmm. you know, because you're just praying and praying the whole time that you're doing the right thing. And, in fact, you know, he survived, and they did come back to court, and the mother was very grateful because she realized that it was really fear that kept her, you know, from doing that. And I'm not saying that's what the case is in Connecticut, but the court does have the authority to do what's in the best interest of the child to save the child's life, yes.
Based upon a complaint.
Based upon a complaint, yes.
Right. Let me go to Karen at 239-1310. Hi, Karen. I think Karen has run out of her nine lives today with just two. Put us on. You don't put us on hold, especially with bad elevator music. Let me go to Tanya, 239-1310. Hi, Tanya. Tanya, are you there? All right, Tanya put us on hold. Let me go to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I was calling because at the current situation, DCS has been, children have been put into my mother's care where she lives with me and my husband. But my husband is currently on parole, but his parole officer wrote a letter, you know, that he's in full compliance, you know, does everything as, you know, he's supposed to, but they still would not let my husband back into his own home because the children is there. You know, I don't think that that's fair when my husband has nothing on his background to do with the DCS, never has, but they won't allow him, you know, to be in the home.
And the reason they won't allow him in the home?
Because they said it because he has a felony, but
okay,
the felony has nothing to do with DCS.
Hold on. What is the felony?
It's for burglary, but it's for like 10 years ago.
Okay, now, I gotta be very careful because Judge Bonaventura cannot comment on this specific case. But I'm gonna ask a general question. Is someone who has been convicted of a felony and released from incarceration, are they allowed to be in the home with children?
Generally speaking, no.
Generally speaking, no.
No, okay. Right. There are exceptions to that. You know, remote in time might be one of them, you know, that it happened so long ago. A judge can probably overrule what our rules are because we have to have some parameters within which to place children. And one of them is that we don't place children in the home of a non-relative, namely this, I'm assuming that the husband in this case is not the father of the children.
Well, let me ask, the person, that just got out of prison is not the birth father, correct?
He is not.
Okay.
He's an uncle.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so those rules are there to protect the safety and welfare of children. And if somebody other than the DCS, namely a judge, decides that that child should be there regardless of this person or whoever the person in question's criminal record is, then so be it. But we have to have rules within which to place children.
Caller, let me ask you, at the hearing, did DCS say this was their policy or they just simply said, no, we can't do this?
They simply said, no, that we can't do this. And I personally went, and because it's my husband, and they're staying at my home with my mother. My mother had moved in with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had to move into a hotel for the past 2 weeks, and this week will be the third. Next week will be the third, because their second hearing isn't until next Friday. But his parole officer even has written a letter, put his number and everything on it, saying that he has been completely compliant with the law. He has had no dealings with the law, mm-hmm. you know, anything, but they still will not allow my husband to be in his own home.
Did you all introduce that letter into evidence at the hearing?
We did, but they said that they weren't looking at it at the time.
Okay.
They would not look at the letter at that time. They said they can't look at the letter until the next hearing.
Okay. Have they scheduled the next hearing?
Yes.
For when? How long?
For the 6th.
Is it possible that parole officer could attend that hearing?
I'm not sure if he can attend, but we still have, you know, the letter have never looked at.
What you might want to do is see if that parole officer would be willing to attend the hearing. I don't promise anything, but I think the people physically seeing someone from parole, you know, standing up and putting his hand on the Bible and testifying, you never know.
Right.
That could help.
Okay.
But they should have explained to you that was the policy.
They did not. They just said that they did not think that it would be in the children's best interest at that time. We gave them the letter. They never looked at it or anything.
It sounds like they could have done a better job of explaining that. To you, but I would also encourage you, if that parole officer, you know, is willing, you know, to look the hearing officer in the eye and the judge and say what's on his mind and his or her gut feeling, see if they're willing to do that. That might impress. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. You're quite welcome. Let me go to Brandon at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
What's up?
I'm on the way to work. So thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a listener to your show every time I go to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to press upon the definition for all your listeners out there. Could the judge or you please give the true definition of abuse and neglect?
That's a great question. That is a great question. What is the definition, Judge, of abuse and neglect?
Okay. Well, I don't have a dictionary in front of me, so I'll just give you what, you know, off the top of my head here. Abuse would be an act that you commit against a child that would cause injury or harm to the child. Mm-hmm. So we know what those are. You know, you burn the child with a cigarette. You know, you overly spank a child to the point where they're bleeding because you've hit them with a belt buckle. You break their arm. You twist their arm. You shake them because they're crying and they have a brain bleed or they're, you know, they're, the retinas are bleeding or whatever. That's abuse. Neglect is putting a child into a situation that is harmful to the well-being and safety of the child. So a dirty house, a house with roaches, dog feces, exposed wires, using drugs in front of the child, methamphetamine, heroin, whatever it is, which puts a child in danger of, you know, something bad happening because they can't fend for themselves.
Leaving a loaded firearm in reach of a child.
Leaving a loaded firearm where a child can get it, play with it, shoot themselves or their sibling, or in some cases we've heard lately, shooting the mother and one in the grocery store. So that would be neglect.
Is it also, I gotta run into the store right quick. I'm going to leave the kids in the car. It's only 80, it's only 100 degrees outside, but I'm leaving the kids in the car. I'm going to the store. I'll only be in the store a minute.
That's definitely neglect, I think, you know, because especially depending on the weather, what neighborhood you're in, the age of the children, things like that.
There is a definition of abuse.
There is, and I'll read it to you. Okay. Abuse is defined in Indiana Code 3134.12 as an act in which a child's physical or mental health is seriously endangered or seriously due to injury by the act or omission of the child's parent, guardian, or custodian. Neglect is defined in Indiana Code 3134.11 as an act in which a child's physical or mental condition is seriously impaired or seriously endangered as the result of the inability, refusal, or neglect of the child's parent, guardian, or custodian to supply the child with necessary food, clothing, shelter, medical care, education, or supervision.
That's the definition in the rule book, in code, and it said supervision, so that includes if it's somebody in daycare, if it's a daycare provider, if it's you got your kids over at the neighbors, auntie and uncle is taking care of them. It could be in a controlled school environment if a school employee is doing something, all of the above.
Right.
See, now you know. 239 is a great question. Appreciate asking that. 239-1310. 239-1310. Back to the phones and Betty. Hi, Betty.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, I got a question for the judge.
Okay.
Because I signed a consent form for adoption due to that. I've seen my kids 3 or 4 times out of a year. Due to they're supposed to give me a P.O. box number to do to so I can stay in contact with my kids. Soon after I signed it, they took it and ran with it. That my own child had to hire a private investigator to find me because they said I was dead.
They said you were dead?
They said I was legally dead.
Who said you were legally dead if I'm here talking to you?
The Child Protective Service sit there and said that I was legally dead. My children have not seen me since that paperwork had been signed. That my own youngest son had to hire a private investigator to find me to see that I am still living. They still would not let this boy see me.
Okay, first of all, how old is this child?
Okay, the child, when he sent the private investigator, they just stopped me last year.
Okay.
I have been dealing with this case for about 15 years. Lawyers and everything have been looking at it.
All right. And so the reason that you cannot see your birth child is what again?
It's because they sit there and tell my children I was dead.
Okay, who has custody of these children?
Okay, the children now, I'm calling because the kids are grown. My youngest daughter is 16 now. She had not seen me since she was 2.
Okay.
Ever since she was 2 years old, they told my children that I had passed on legally. And my kids was wondering why they couldn't see me due to the agreement I had with them that I could see them 3 or 4 times out of the year. They supposed to give me a P.O. box number to stay in contact with my children. I never got none of that.
And so they're now adopted, correct?
Yes. They was adopted, but the consent form for adoption due to me being able to pick the parents. One of my kids got adopted out without me even saying it was okay for her to be adopted out. They changed his whole name.
All right. Well, given that, A, I am talking to you, which under Indiana law means you are living. God bless you. Here's what I want to do. What I want to do is off the air, Shelley's going to get off the air your name and a number where you can be reached during the day.
Okay.
And then the members of the judge's staff at DCS will get a hold of you and try to figure out, A, why somebody's saying you're dead when we're talking to you.
Uh-huh.
And C, is there a legal way where you can contact your kids?
Yes, because ever since my son found me, they still won't let him have contact with me.
And who's saying you can't have contact with you?
They started saying that once he found me, they shipped him out of state. They took him away from down here. One child lived in Noblesville, Indiana. I mean, when they got my children, they just sit there and said, no, she's not going to see these babies. Once the agreement went in with the judge, no rights was terminated. First thing is how the case got involved, and my kids accidentally got
injured. All right, hold on. And this is a case that was here in Marion County?
In Marion County, yes.
In Marion County, and do you know the name of the DCS caseworker?
It was Dorothy Winder.
All right, give Shelly the name of that caseworker too, okay? So I'm gonna put you on. So I'm gonna go to the break, and she's gonna pick up the phone off the air. Give her that information. All right. All right, 239-1310, 239-1310. I think Judge Bonaventura is getting stuff. So when she writes her memoirs, working with kids, she's got at least one or two chapters. 239-1310. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more after these.
Hello, this is Pastor Michael K. Jones, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310.
We're with the head of the Indiana Department of Child Services, Judge Mary Beth Bonaventura, and you guys are doing something unique. What's that?
Okay. We're doing a program or an initiative called the Children's Mental Health Initiative. Mm-hmm. And what that is about is to really answer the need that's in the community, in most communities across the state, and I know here in Marion County, where kids suffer from mental health issues. And there's not a lot of services for those children. So oftentimes what happens is that parents are frustrated because of maybe explosive behavior or whatever, and they call the police. Mm-hmm. The police get the child, bring the child to the detention center, and then everybody kind of knows the child really hasn't committed, say, a delinquent act in the true sense, right, but knows that if they're released, they could be harmful to themselves or to others. So delinquency petitions are filed, or in the alternative, a CHINS petition filed because the parents are unable to be able to access help for them. So then what we've done prior is we've sort of stigmatized children by making them a ward of the department or naming them a delinquent in a delinquency petition so that they can access services. Because once they're either a CHINS or a delinquent, they can get services that they need. So what this initiative is about is that we've contracted with service providers and collaborated with the Department of Mental Health and Addiction to get what's called an access site. So an access site would be somebody, if you knew, let's say, anybody could refer a child to this access site for an evaluation. They would go there and be evaluated, all voluntary with the parents' assistance and cooperation. And then if the child is between the age of 6 and 17 and has a certain diagnosis that falls within this range, which just is about every diagnosis there is, the child does not have Medicaid, does not qualify for behavioral under the BEADS program for the disabled children, or is not a ward already or a delinquent, they would fall into this category, and we can then serve this population without any coercive intervention of the court. And so these are just voluntary people voluntarily going in, going to the access site, getting the evaluation, and then getting the services. The access site in Marion County is the Midtown Community Health Center.
Midtown.
Okay.
We know them.
And because I'm from Lake, I don't know these people.
Oh, they're great.
I'm sure I could get to know them. And
part of Eskenazi Health in them.
Okay, so I'll have to go check them out. But so far, it's been rolled out in March of last year to all 92 counties. We've had over 1,600 referrals to all the access sites all over the state.
So this is something where if the parents got a kid and they can't control them, but the kid hadn't broken a law, hadn't broken a window out, but mama or daddy sense if they don't get him help, something's going to happen. They need to get a hold of Midtown Mental Health.
Right. And those services are free. The Department of Child Services pays for those services, and up to and including placement. We have placed around 50 children in this program that have been, some of whom are currently still in placement and some of whom have gone home successfully after being treated with their families. And this is all voluntary.
Is this something when people call, because people are getting ready to call now, Midtown Mental Health, do they need to ask for something specific if they call Midtown?
Just the access site for the Children's Mental Health Initiative.
Children's Mental Health Initiative and Midtown Mental Health, you don't know where it is at 32nd and Meridian Street, 3171 North Meridian Street, right next to Indiana Black Expo's headquarters, and their number is 941-5003, 941-5003, you know, and don't be afraid if you got a young person you think they're kind of getting to that point where they could be in trouble. And here's DCS. DCS said, hey, we really don't want them in our system. The juvenile court just said, hey, we really don't want them in our system. And now there's help, and just go to Midtown Mental Health and talk about the Children's Mental Health Initiative.
Correct.
And see, I'm going to be calling, the folks at Eskenazi in Midtown to have them come back on here and talk about that. That's a great thing. Let's go back to the phones. 239-1310. Something positive from our Department of DCS from the Child Police. That's a good thing. Let me go to Rashonda. Hi there.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
I have a question for the judge. Years ago, I placed my son with DCS because I was having a financial hardship, couldn't keep a job. Anyway, that was remedied before my parental rights were taken, but they still took my parental rights. They came out to see the house, and they had proof of my income. And that was the only reason why we were separated. I want to know, were they in the right for that?
She can't answer that.
Oh, she can't.
No, because that's still a case that's been there. Did you ever appeal the decision?
I did. I went to the Supreme Court, and they denied me also. Okay, well, she can't address that. Well, can she address, is there any way possible if you feel you were not treated fairly, I can get a lawyer and try to get my parental rights back or some visitation or something. Is that possible?
I believe if you believe that
I was treated unjustly.
That you were treated unjustly and that there are reasons why you deserve to have your parental rights restored. Yes,
they can be restored.
The court order said they could not?
No, I said, I'm asking you, can they?
I believe they can be, but that's a case that you and your attorney are going to have to make. Why were they denied?
Because I placed him with DCS for hardship. They didn't take him for neglect or abuse. I couldn't keep a job. I was having financial hardship. I was, you know, had nowhere to stay.
Okay,
then let me go to first grade. So I placed him. He was away from me for the 18 months, but I remedied income and housing. They came out to see my house. I had a bedroom and everything. I had proof of income. And they still ended my parental rights, and he was adopted out.
All right. How many years ago has this been?
This has been 7.
All right. If you can, it seems to me, if you and your attorney can make a case before the judge that in the last 7 years you have made great progress in terms of being a great person,
right?
A person of God, a person that can
love
take
my child.
That now, yeah, that you can handle your business,
right?
And make that case. And I think in a court you would have the right to bring witnesses to testify on that behalf. That would include, if you've got a church home, your minister.
Okay.
That could include your employer, if you've had a steady employer since then. If you can make the case that your life has turned around and that you can handle the responsibility of being a mom again,
right?
That's the way you need to proceed and get an attorney that's experienced in dealing with family law.
Okay, so that was my question. They can be returned back to you if you get an attorney.
The attorney's the first part. Then you need to sit down and talk to the attorney.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay,
Let me quickly go to Anonymous. Anonymous, you got about a minute.
Hi. I was trying to find out. My grandkids, I was their foster parent, and BCS removed them from me because they said it was neglect, and it was never any neglect. I never even went to court or anything about the problem.
How long ago was that? Hold on. How long ago was this case?
It's been probably about 10 years ago.
It's been about 10 years ago. So where does it stand now? You're still the grandparent. Where are the kids?
They've all been adopted out in 5 different homes.
So what's the question?
My question was, wasn't I supposed to get a chance to appear in court and, you know, talk about what they did and...
Since the judgment of Bonaventura was not over DCS 10 years ago, let me ask that question in terms of current. If a case came currently and DCS felt that a grandparent who was a foster parent was accused of alleged neglect, would today that grandparent have the right to stand up in court and tell her side of the story?
No, they wouldn't have the right because mm-hmm. they're not a party. Only the parents would have the right to be in court and present evidence. But that said, the courts, and I know this, really cherish placing children with family, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, really cherish our foster parents, because without our foster parents, we can't do this job. Mm-hmm. And so I know when I was judge, I always welcomed the foster parents to come to court to tell me what's going on in the home. After all, they're the ones that are taking care of the children. But this is a little bit different in that if they were accused of neglect of the child, and is what this lady is saying is that the children were removed, I would say minimally the court is going to have to know what that neglect was to have moved those children, because the court has to be told and, in fact, has to approve that move mm-hmm. of the children. Would she have the right to be there? There's no legal right. Mm-hmm. But just as a matter of procedure and practice, the courts want to know because, again, those foster parents are the partners of the whole system, because we can't do this work without foster parents.
Does the foster parent, if a foster parent is accused, do they have the right to go to an attorney and have the attorney approach DCS and say no?
No, they don't. But what they have the right to do, because what will happen is if the home is deemed to be inappropriate or unsafe for children, mm-hmm. their license can be revoked by mm-hmm. our agency, because we give the licenses and we can take the licenses away for good cause. And if they don't like the decision, they can appeal that decision to an administrative law judge that is a part of our system.
Anonymous, was your license to be a foster parent revoked?
No, nothing was filed on me. I even went and looked at what they supposed to have pictures, and there was no pictures. They couldn't prove no pictures. The names they had listed, some of them weren't even my grandchildren.
But this was 10 years ago, correct?
Yes. I still have all the paperwork.
That's not, the problem is, even with this 10 years ago, I don't know whether you can bring up any kind of case, because that would be after what's called the statute of limitations, because there's a time limit, and it sounds like that's not how they operate now.
Yes, because even the way that they came in and removed the children, I mean, it was everything the way they did it. The case manager that was over the case.
I got it. One final thing. Do you still have contact with these kids? Or
do you know where they are? Now I do.
No, you do. Okay.
Two of them I haven't saw in years.
Okay. All right. Well, at least you got some contact. I appreciate that. Let me go. James will be our last caller with Judge Mary Beth Bonaventura, the Department of Child Services. Hi there. James? Oh, see, James is, let me go to Anonymous right quick. Hi there. Anonymous. I think we've answered everybody's question today. If people want more information, there is the website, which is www.in.gov/DCS. Is that it?
That's it.
And so hopefully the Senate won't take any of the money out that the House gave you, and maybe the Senate will give you a little bit more.
Maybe they will. We're going to see if we need more.
We always ask for more.
But then if you do that, they don't believe you when you tell them what you really need. So you want to ask for what you need. That was how I operated in the league.
I always thought you asked for more, and then they try to cut it down because they know you're asking for more, so we'll cut it. That's not
my style.
That's not your style?
No, I like to be transparent. This is what I need, and they'll believe me.
Judge Mary Beth Bonaventura, the Director of Indiana's Department of Child Services, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.